doing good. Since the death of Millie's husband just yesterday, I kind of reminded me that we have a lot of widows here at Plymouth. And doing good, particularly to those of the family of God, is a command of the Lord given through Paul in Galatians 6:10. When you have the opportunity to help anyone, we should do it. But we should give special attention to those who are in the family of believers. We think of our own family, and we think of them first, usually, don't we? But the family of God, believe it or not, is our real family. When Jesus asked, "Who is my mother? Who are my brothers and sisters?" And he pointed to those there, those who would be disciples. And so we are family. When James, in James 1:26 and 27, talked about widows, here's what he said. "People who think they are religious but say things they should not say are just fooling themselves. Their religion is worth nothing. Religion that God accepts as pure and without fault is this: caring for orphans or widows who need help and keeping yourselves free from the world's influence." Now this comes in a section where James is talking about people who hear but don't do, or people who hear but forget what they have heard. And he is talking to forgetful hearers. While it is true that worship takes place first in the heart, worship must go beyond the heart into actions that are seen within the world. I think of the Pharisees. Jesus complained against them. He said, "You even give God a tenth of your garden spices." Fantastic. But you forget something. What did they forget? The weightier parts of the law: justice, mercy, and faithfulness. And sometimes I think we're tempted to do the same. Church Sunday morning, check. Sunday school, check. Sunday night, oh, I get a double check for that. That's extra points. Oh, and Wednesday night, I get some extra points for that too. Check, check, check. Oh, am I a good Christian? And that's not wrong. That's good. And I'm not saying we shouldn't attend. But if that is our religion, we are missing the boat. Because God expects something of us. Faith was always active, even in the Old Testament. If God had called Abraham, and Abraham said, "Okay, Lord, I'm heard," but never left Mesopotamia, would the promise ever have been fulfilled through Abraham? You see, faith requires action. And when the word here that's talking about religion and religious is the word that means an outside thing going on. A religion that is working outside of just the heart. Once again, religion in the heart is important. But if it's only in the heart and never shows itself outward, James says it's a worthless religion. A local church or a member of a local church can have a reputation of being alive. But what did Jesus say in the book of Revelation? But really, they are dead. Or they might have a reputation of being rich. But Jesus says, in reality, you're poor. It's Revelation chapter 3. You see, a religion that does not act upon its convictions is nothing in the eyes of God. Because He expects love and mercy and grace to be a part of that religion. You know, I think of driving down the street on a Sunday morning. I see a little old lady with a broken down car. What do? Drive to church so I'm not late? Or do I stop and help and show Christian love to one who is not of the church? In our modern culture, I'm afraid we're often influenced within the church by our culture. Not always to the good. And some of the things of our culture aren't necessarily bad, but they're also not necessarily Christian. Pure means what is free from sin or stain. That is why Jesus commanded, when you come to the altar, you're bringing your gift to God, and you come to the altar, and all of a sudden you remember, one of my brethren has something against me. Jesus said, what? Leave your offer at the altar, go to the brother and make it right, then come back and offer your sacrifice to God. See, love and mercy and grace are active and visible. What God sees as acceptable religion is a service, a sacrifice that combines itself with a holy life that is active in participation of good works. You see, God expects more than just a faith in the heart. Because a faith in the heart that does nothing is worth nothing in the eyes of God. In the Bible, to take care of, and it says, take care of who? The orphans and the widows. To take care of means, and I looked this up this afternoon, it can mean both financial, spiritual, and physical. To take care of means exactly that, to take care of in all of these manners. The widows should be watched after. Do they need help financially? Do they need help physically? Do they need help spiritually? And we are commanded particularly to watch out for our orphans and our widows. And I wanted to know something. I came over here this afternoon. I wanted to check some things. I do my best studying at home, but all my books are here at the church building. But I looked up exactly what was meant by orphans and widows. And it was interesting. A widow was not just a woman who lost her husband to death. A widow was also considered a woman who had been kicked out of her house by her husband, had been put away by her husband, divorced by her husband. This was also considered a widow, and the church was commanded to take care of them. An orphan was not just children who had lost parents to death, but children who had been cast out of the house. And at this time, the first century, a lot of that happened. Children were just put out of the house. And if you go and read some of the early church fathers, you see they were very active in taking in these children that had been cast out and taking care of them and raising them up in the Lord. So widows and orphans are not just those who have lost someone to death, but those who have been cast out or divorced by their husbands, a woman in the first century who had no husband. There wasn't too many options, Charlie. The woman at the well, for example. They had it rough. How could they survive? And so the church was commanded, pay particular attention to orphans and widows, what were seen as the helpless in the world. But particularly, those in the family of God. It's interesting. The New Testament does not legislate on how we do this or how much or how long we do this. The command was to do it. And there's something in our culture, and it bothers me, because it is inside the church. What do we love to say about people in our society who are down and out? What do we say they should do? How's the exact word? They should pull themselves up by the bootstraps. Isn't that something we say a lot in America? Or something, and I bet you that there's probably people in Plymouth who think this is found in scriptures. God helps those who help themselves. And that is not to be found in the Bible. You see, there are people who can't help themselves. Some of you know April and Greg. Greg has lost his job, and I talked to April Friday, and she said, Greg is looking. He wants a job. He's sent resumes out. He's called. He's looking every day for a job. He started in this area, then he expanded. She says he's looking out of state already. He wants to find a job so bad. But yet, he can't find one. The poor guy's always overqualified, whatever that's supposed to mean. I don't see how you can be overqualified to do a work. But here's a man that's seeking and can't find. A man that would love to pull himself up by his bootstraps. But he's sunk so deep he can't get out by himself. He needs help. And there are many that can't help themselves. They need the help of someone. Matter of fact, we Christians could not pull ourselves out of the mire of sin. God had to do it for us. And yet our culture says, and this is not always wrong. The thought isn't that bad. That we need to help ourselves first. That we need to be doing something ourselves. But that's not always possible. We need to pay attention to one another. We need particularly to pay attention to the helpless. Our widows, our orphans, and those who need help. Yes, Timothy commands that if they have family, the family should help. But what if the family doesn't help? What if the family isn't Christian? Then once again, it falls upon the church to do something. Because not even Christians help always as they should. And yet, we have been commanded to help the widows, particularly. But yet, how often do we check up on our widows here at Plymouth? A lot of people like to say, it's the elders' jobs, it's the preacher's job, and it is. But it's not just their job. They're also your brothers and sisters in Christ. Even in the Old Testament, God thought of the care of the widows, the orphans, and the strangers in the land. Listen to this. This is Deuteronomy 24. Verse 17 to verse 22. Do not be unfair to a foreigner or an orphan. Don't take a widow's coat to make sure she pays you back. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt and the Lord your God saved you from there. That is why I am commanding you to do this. When you are gathering your harvest in the field and leave behind a bundle of grain, don't go back and get it. Leave it there for foreigners, orphans, and widows, so that the Lord your God can bless you in everything you do. When you beat your olive tree to knock the olives off, I didn't know they did that. I always wondered how they got olives out of those trees. It says, don't beat the tree a second time. Leave what is left for foreigners and orphans and widows. When you harvest grapes in your vineyard, don't pick the vines a second time. Leave what is left for foreigners, orphans, and widows. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. That is why I am commanding you to do this. And in their fields of grain, they were commanded to leave the corners unharvested for the widows, the orphans, and the foreigners. God cares about the helpless. And he has found ways to help them. In the Old Testament, through the farmers leaving a part of the harvest, and not harvesting a second time, and today through the church. He wants us to take care of our own, but also when the opportunity arises, foreigners and strangers. Yes, we in America, sometimes our thinking is good, but always not Christian. You know, philanthropist. Some of the great philanthropists of old, Vanderbilt, and I don't even know all those rich guys that left huge amounts of money. But have you ever noticed where they left their monies? Schools? Libraries? And why? Because they had this philosophy. They need to pull themselves up by the bootstrap. Let them go in the library and study how to do better. Let them go to school and learn how to do better. And those aren't bad ideas. But that's not always feasible for all people. God has designated us as His hands and His feet, as well as His mouthpiece. It is true. Paul said anyone who refuses to work should not eat. And I agree with that. Because Paul said it, that means it's from God. But once again, what about those who can't find the work, who want to work but can't find any? And even in that passage where he talks about this, and Paul said, when I was there with my workers, we worked. We earned our way so we wouldn't be a burden on you. But Paul said, we did have the right, though, to ask for help. But it comes down, and I got to find it now because I didn't mark it. Verse 13, and that was in 2 Thessalonians 3. But verse 13, in this passage, comes out and says, never become tired of doing good. Because isn't that sometimes what happens? We say, I helped that person. We help them now 3, 4, 5 times. How often must we help them? Well, how often must we forgive? You see, Paul says, never become tired of doing good. You know, one reason could very well be, you never know when you might be helping an angel unawares. We don't know. In Matthew 25, 41 through 46, the king will say to those on his left, go away from me, you will be punished. Go into the fire that burns forever that was prepared for the devils and his angels. You see, it wasn't prepared for the lost sinner. It was prepared for Satan and his followers. But then he says, I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was alone, away from home, and you did not invite me into your house. I was without clothes, and you gave me nothing to wear. I was sick and in prison, and you did not care for me. Then those people will answer, Lord, that shows that they were people who were religious and wanting to follow Jesus. Lord, when did we see you hungry, thirsty, alone and away from home without clothes or sick or in prison? When did we see these things and not help you? Here's the reply from Jesus. Then the king will answer, I tell you the truth. Anything you refuse to do for even the least of my people here, you refuse to do for me. These people will go off to be punished forever, but the good people will go to live forever. And Jesus once said, even if you give a cup of cold water in my name, you will get your reward. I think part of our problem in America is the media. We have seen on the media so much hurt, so much terrible things going on in the world. We've been desynthesized. We no longer have the feelings we should have when we see hungry people. Because what do we think? Oh, that's in Africa. That's in the Caribbean. But it's even here in our neighborhoods. The same is true about war. We see so many war pictures, so many dead soldiers and people, that when we see it on the news now, it means nothing to us. But this is not the way of Christ. Christ cared. Christ was sensitive to the needs of people. Do you think all of those 5,000 men and who knows how many women and children deserve the meal that Jesus gave them? Did he say, no, you don't get it, you don't deserve it, oh, but you do. No, Jesus let all eat their fill. And they says they were full. There was leftovers. I don't have all the questions or the answers to these questions about how long do we help? Who do we help? Should we help? But then again, I wonder if we have the right to refuse. Because it might one day be an angel and we don't know it. Our job as Christians is to show mercy, to show grace, to show love, and to be faithful to our Lord. This is our spiritual sacrifice. Jesus said once again to those Pharisees, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin." I have no idea what cumin is. "But you have neglected the more important matters of the law. Justice, mercy, faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides. You strain out a gnat, but swallow a camel." Don't let that happen to us. Stay sensitive to the needs of the hurting, particularly those who are members of the family of Christ here at Plymouth. Let us not neglect justice, mercy, and faithfulness. God has never grown tired of loving us. He did not ever grow tired of showing His mercy, nor did He ever stop being faithful to His unfaithful children. No, this never happened. So let us not grow tired of doing good to all men, especially those of the family of believers. How is your spiritual life this evening? Do you need the prayers of the church? Do you need to put the Lord on in baptism? Then tonight is the night. There might not be a tomorrow. Come as we stand and sing.